Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Rod, are you there?
Yes, good morning, Tess.
How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
That's good, that's good. So you'll be chatting with me today instead of Mikey?
Yes, I'm sorry he's not feeling so good. Give him my regards.
I will.
Thank you.
The government has revealed their blueprint coalition this week.
Yes, it was a... I wasn't there in person, but I've been taking a great deal of interest in it. It's my starting point on this is if you look at what's going on in economies and politics and society, and indeed with our ecosystem in terms of climate change and the rest, around the world, you'll see a very big set of issues there where conventional policies have been failing politicians and governments and thus those societies. So I think that this, our plan, as they call it, is a very important step in terms of trying to understand how to deal with all of those issues. And indeed, as the Prime Minister said in her speech on Sunday, the plan looks beyond the three-year election cycle and plans for the next 30 years and longer. And she hopes it proves to be the kind of agenda that outlasts any of us and individual parties and politicians. So it's a very big, very ambitious roadmap and needs to be seen as that, and therefore not judged about so what the government now needs to do is to find some very particular goals to work on and to deliver in this term. They're already 1 year down, two to go, and then suggest what might come in the second term and build up a clearer picture of what it expects to deliver when across that very ambitious schedule. But also in the hopes of trying to generate a real broad consensus of support for these issues that does indeed transcend individual parties, so we can take a longer-term approach to solving these very big issues.
Yeah, so the opposition government have obviously critiqued it for being quite airy-fairy and sort of not having any substance. Do you think that's because this was something they didn't do themselves, or do you think that...
That's absolutely what they didn't do. The Key government came into office in 2008 just as the global financial crisis was really hitting... sort of big momentum, you know, big global impacts. So they came into office shortly after the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers, for example. 10th year anniversary of that was just last Saturday. And it took them a long time to work out what they were going to do. They had spent the previous 9 years in opposition not fundamentally examining what policy the country needed and how they might adapt their policies to best deliver on that, but in a narrow political calculus about how to win power. So if you look, for example, at their economic development agenda, they didn't finally put in place what they called their business growth agenda until 2012, which was in the first year of their second term. Then when you look at the end of that nine-year period of English, or Key then English-led government, you get to the point where there was a great deal of frustration around all the issues that weren't addressed, such as housing, such as infrastructure, such as inequality. And you saw even businesses elevating those issues to the top of their priorities ahead of the last election. So that's why I think that there is a genuine and general level of support for the sort of overarching policies that the government is now articulating. But there's a very great deal of work to do to turn those into practical policies. And they will be very long-term policies to make a difference on these issues.
Yeah. Do you think the blueprint provides a sort of transparency that we haven't seen much of before?
Yes, it does. But then, of course, the opposite of that is that it holds the government to a great deal of accountability. You know, you said you were going to do this, but you haven't. So that's the downside of that. And indeed, one of the three themes that the Prime Minister laid out in this speech on Sunday was ensuring, well, making a big commitment to deliver transparent, transformative, and compassionate government was the term. Well, that's not how we normally think of governments. and those are very big things to pin one's hopes on. And then you turn around in Parliament yesterday and you saw what a struggle they were having even to produce Claire Curran's emails so that you could follow through exactly what sort of conversations she'd had with Derek Hanby about whether or not he's going to be chief technology officer for the government. So these are very big promises, and therefore it's going to be, it's kind of setting up the government to be a real target for delivering on them.
The idea of having regular public reports to track the progress seems like something we've really not seen before.
The previous government did have developed a very full framework of sort of better public service goals in terms of deliverables in health and education and all sorts of other areas. So this government has then discontinued that, but is developing its own set of measures that reflect some of those sorts of approaches. So it is important to have those, but I think it's also important to make sure you don't, you might have a lot of them internally, so you can keep track over over a wide number of fields. But you don't want to be spraying around a vast number of measures, because I think that's publicly, because and you want to make them all available, but you only want to focus on a few of them help the public focus on what are the key issues you're dealing with and what sort of progress you're making on.
And the public releasing of the cabinet papers, does that tie in with this whole blueprint?
Yes, the phrase there is about proactive release of papers.
Yeah.
And that's a very good thing to do. They many cabinet papers are perfectly accessible. You just kind of have to ask for them. Obviously, for good reasons, some aren't. But to actually make them available when you announce a big initiative and you've got all the supporting documentary evidence behind it, it's good that cabinet paper is readily available, as it was in this case.
Yeah, and they're starting that from next year, I believe. Do you think, why not start it immediately? Do you know?
I don't know about the delay. You'd want to have a good process in place in the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet that processes all these papers and, you know, develops all the does all the work around the agendas and the papers. So maybe that's the needing to devise and put in place a good process is the likely explanation for that delay.
Yeah. So overall, do you think that this shows that they've got a strong coalition going on?
That's a really good question. It moves us into very difficult territory because there is clearly a good working relationship between Labour and Greens. But New Zealand First is plain difficult. It's got a lot to do with the personality of Peters in particular, but also Shane Jones. This is a coalition that's going to need very considerable levels of management by the Prime Minister. Certainly there have been some calls, increasing calls, influential people to Peters to behave more like a committed member of a coalition rather than grandstanding the way he does, and trying to exert a disproportionate amount of leverage on the government.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, thanks so much for talking to us, Rod, and we'll talk to you in about a month's time.
Yes, thanks, Tess. See you.
See you.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.